And so every once in a while when I speak, I like to record myself and put it up there, because there's people all over the world that don't have SLA meetings where they live, and you know, sometimes you don't have internet or it's the middle of the night, you can get an MP3 and listen to it. I'm Jake, I'm a sex and love addict,
Jake.
and I've got 11 years sober in this program at this point, which is apparently a lot. I'm in some other programs where 11 years doesn't sound like a lot, but I go to a lot of meetings of SLA, and I rarely run into guys with more than 11 years. I saw Dave at this Friday meeting that I love going to, and there's like three or four guys there that have a whole mess of time. And I love going to that meeting and you know, learning from them when I can. I'm really grateful to be sober in SLAA. I think it's exciting and brave that you all have come out here to participate in your own recovery. If you don't mind, just raise your hand if you never did any 12-step stuff before. You guys all have. Okay, cool. Good reference point for me. I guess, you know, the way that I got into SLAA was I was stuck on a lady. She dumped me 14 times in 10 months. I kept coming back over and over again and asking her to take me back, and then we'd get together, and then she'd dump me again. And made me feel like killing myself. I knew that she was bad for me, but I couldn't stay away. And I just felt like I was dependent on her whims, and that her whims would just change. But I couldn't get away from that. And I've got 18 years in AA and 16 years in Al-Anon and 16 years in DA, and none of that stuff was working for me. I went to the most sagacious people to do relationship inventories in those programs. I pursued every single out-of-the-box thing I could think of, and nothing was doing it. I came to this program, and I got a very rigid, black and white, very serious sponsor, and I really needed that early on. And withdrawal was a relief for me. I didn't have to worry, should I have gotten that person's number, or should I say this and that during that time? It was just a relief. I'm not doing any of this. You know, I have a sponsee who likes to say withdrawal is a vacation from women. He says it a little bit more coarsely, but a vacation from dalliance. And you know, if I can look at it as a vacation, that's, you know, a relief. You know, the thing is that there are 8 billion people in the world. When withdrawal is over, they're still going to be there. As a sex and love addict, I feel like every interaction is the one, or could be the one. You know, my brain makes it into it, right? And I guess, so far, I'm mostly talking about love addiction. I couldn't get away from this person. You know, the other thing, you know, like when I had sex with her, I always wanted her to say, I love you, I love you, I love you. You know, I'm just constantly saying, I love you, I love you. Like this transporting idea of being obsessed over was a thing for me. I had a sponsee once who said, I want to get married to a woman who can't keep her hands off me. And I said, well, that doesn't sound like, if I have a wife for years and she still can't keep her hands off me, there might be something strange there. There might be something going on there. That's not what marriage is, from my understanding now. And I'm glad it's that way. It would be a little strange if I couldn't go a day without, you know, having my wife all over me. So talking about love addiction and then sex addiction, for me, I made the amount of people that I seduced my source of self-worth. I wanted everyone should want to sleep with me. And if not that, then everyone should think I'm really cool and that they want to be me. I was a performer, and I wanted everyone in the whole world to know who I was and know my name. And if you think about every performer, like the most popular performers, you know, actors, musicians, whatever, there's nobody in the world that every single person loves that person. You know, some person who's universally lauded as extremely talented, you go on their internet page and there's somebody going, this person sucks, that's terrible, you know. There's no person that everyone loves. But my sex and love addiction has this very, very unrealistic idea that everyone should want to sleep with me, everyone should want to be friends with me, everyone in the whole world should think I'm wonderful, and that's not a goal that I can attain. You know, so the addiction is engaging in all these behaviors that are designed to do that, that leave me alone, you know, because if I'm in a relationship and I'm just chasing the next shiny object, the next attractive to me person that walks by, I go for that person, I get that person, then there's somebody else, I got to go chase them, and then I'm alone. You know, I never connect with anyone. Sobriety for me is a practice of loving and being loved. It's a practice of allowing myself to be seen. And this addiction, whatever angle you're coming at this addiction from, whether it's porn or sex or fantasy or validation, any angle that you come at it from, the disease is designed to remove us from reality. It's designed to remove us from our lives. My disease wants me dead. It wants me miserable and alone and dead. And so it'll make it so I don't have a meaningful connection with anybody else, that I don't open up my heart and experience the actual feeling of trusting and being trusted, loving and being loved. My disease wants me miserable and alone and dead. And it achieves that in all sorts of ways. For me, you know, I'm an anorexic sex and love addict. Anorexic sex and love addict means a lot of stuff. It means being afraid to have friends. It means being afraid to have sex. It means being afraid to open up emotionally, all sorts of things. And so, you know, I'm a sex and love addict and an anorexic. I'm a love addict. I'm a sex addict. The common bond is my addiction wants me distracted. It wants me messing up my life so that my life is not advancing or evolving. It wants me miserable and dead, and it wants me distracted and not present in reality. You know, today I have a wife and child, but my addiction and anorexia will keep me from being present with her. If we're having sex, my brain will try to think about somebody else. If she doesn't want to have sex, I'll think, well, the relationship is terrible because she doesn't want to have sex with me and I'm not a man because I can't seduce her. And then if she wants to have sex, then I'm afraid that I can't perform and I don't believe that she loves me and I'm gonna mess it up and this isn't right, and then we'll be in the middle of having sex, I'll be thinking about somebody else. I cannot just be a fucking husband, like be a guy who loves and is loved. Thank God, because I, for example, come and speak to you guys, because I do things that treat my addiction, I am actually able to be present with my family today. I am able to be present with others, and K-Fuck Radio is not always running at full volume in my head. at all times. You know, the volume goes down a little bit, or I can discern between the set of addictive thoughts and the regular thoughts, and I can exist and, you know, occasionally, here and there, enjoy life, be present for it, not be obsessed with all these things. You know, if I'm in a room with 100 people and 99 of them like me and one doesn't, I will be thinking about the one person the whole time. The one person that doesn't like me, how I can change their opinion. And that's my addiction. My addiction wants me to miss all the good things in my life so that I can focus on the one thing that's upsetting or the three things that are upsetting. I believe that if a person has addiction, and I mean that in the broad sense of addiction, that my brain will flip through the Rolodex until it finds something that's convincing to make me focus on to be miserable about. So if I'm happy about my relationship today, then I'll be upset about money. And if that doesn't work, then I'll be worried about my health. And if that doesn't work, then I'll be angry about how this person talked to me. But whatever it is, I'm not present, because my understanding of the definition of addiction is that it's a spiritual malady, which is kind of what I'm describing. It's a mental obsession. Once I start obsessing about the thing, once I start thinking about the thing that I'm going to have for my addiction, by the end of the day, I'm going to find it and I'm going to handle my addiction. I'm going to get the thing that I want. And it's a physical allergy, meaning that if I get a little hit of the thing that triggers me, I want a ton of it. So, you know, what that looks like today is I'll be watching Jeopardy with my wife, and I'll get a question right, and she'll say something like, "Oh, you're smart." And I'll say, "Tell me more about how I'm smart. Tell me other ways of what you think is good about me." I can't get enough, you know, compliments, chocolate chip cookies, validation. That's me. So this spiritual malady is part of addiction. And for me, my understanding of a spiritual malady is I'm never okay with when and where I am. If I'm at home, I want to be at the party. If I'm at the party, I want to be at home. If I'm at home, I'm like, "Oh, I'm a loser. Nobody likes me. I'm not, nobody invited me anywhere." If I'm at a party, then I'm like, "All these people suck. I don't want to be here. It's too loud. This is annoying." And I'll go home, and then I'll feel like a loser at home. I'm never happy with when and where I am. I'm always uncomfortable. And so I seek to fill this kind of endless hole inside of me with all the things that I'm addicted to. And I'm in 5 programs, so that's why I talk about this like it's a broad spectrum. My understanding of addiction is that addiction is all the same. It's just, what is the thing that we are removing ourselves from reality with? So I spent a lot of years trying to seduce as many people as possible, trying to date as many people as possible, and ending up alone and without a meaningful relationship from that. I was extremely insecure, and I dated people who I thought other people would want me to date. I dated people who I thought, if I stand next to that person, then you'll think I'm great, I'm worthy of praise. You know, sometimes I dated people that subconsciously I didn't want to date, but I felt like other people would think I should date that person. I twisted myself into a pretzel to try to be what I thought other people wanted me to be. I was a Silver Lake music promoter. I was throwing all these shows, like 8 shows a month, putting all these shows on, and people thought of me as the guy that you go to get a performance in Silver Lake, to get on a stage. And I would promote all these shows and go to all these shows, and I felt completely alone at these shows. I started to realize I did all this stuff because I thought being the coolest, hippest guy would be the answer. But it wasn't actually activities that I was interested in doing. So, you know, to wrap up, because we're getting to the end of the 15 minutes, I came to this program, went through withdrawal, didn't date until we get to the end of the withdrawal, got a dating plan, started sober dating, did that for a few years, stuck to my dating plan, and eventually I met the woman that became my wife, and I believe that the reason we have a successful relationship is because I stopped and sat still, and in withdrawal, I developed a new relationship with myself and with God. And I learned who I am and what I like to do with my time, which wasn't promoting a bunch of hipster music shows, you know, no offense or anything, but that wasn't my interest. I discovered who I was, what my hobbies were, what do I want to do with my time, and then I was able to show up as me to the relationship rather than trying to be what somebody else would want me to be. And so I had a relationship that was based in truth. And I've got a 3-year-old toddler today, and she is the center of my universe, you know, just joy. The other day I was getting this pretty routine operation they were putting me under, and I felt, they were putting me under, and I had my last thought before I went under anesthesia was just this nice family hug memory that I had from a couple days ago of us all hugging. And I never would have been open to being a part of that community of three. I never would have been open. I would have destroyed it a long time ago, hunting and pushing and forcing and proving. So I'm really great that, I'm really grateful that I've found relief from that. And thank you for letting me share.